It seems weird that they turn their back on an American cycling hero like Greg LeMond without their star performer, you, who is on the verge of making them billions, granted. But you had no input, no...
I'm answering your question. I mean, you don't have to believe me. I answered the question. If you want me to say it another way so that you're happy...
No, I don't. We understand exactly what you're saying. There's no communication issues there. You did go after Greg LeMond after he said in that interview with David Walsh that if you were doping, it was the greatest fraud in history. That scene, I think, where you're actually reading the paper is in the Alex Gibney movie. So there was a personal sense of anger towards him, which maybe leads to, you know, some of the language that you use. You don't think you need to make financial restitution, obviously. That's clear.
No, I don't think I do. And here's the thing, Garrett, is I sat in that room, not only with Greg and Kathy, I sat in that room with his lawyer and with my lawyer, and there were plenty of other people in that room, and I apologized to them. Nope, never at any time did Greg and or Kathy say, hey, we feel like you owe us financially, right? And I don't need to get into the details of the conversation. The most important part was that I was sorry for my actions. I was embarrassed by my actions, and I apologized to them, and they accepted the apology.
Okay, I don't think they did accept the apology. It seems that's certainly...
You weren't in the room. What are you talking about?
Well, I've got pretty good sources.
Oh, okay. Okay, Superman. So then what else?
Okay, so let's move on to the Andreas then. We'll leave the Le Mans and maybe we'll reach out to them and see if they want to comment on this afterwards. So with Betsy, I guess it all stems from the hospital room in 1996 and the fact that she testified against you in 2006. Frankie testified against you. There's also now an audio recording of, I think it's an Oakley employee in the room who calls Greg LeMond. This is in the BBC Four film. And she says that if subpoenaed by LeMond's lawyers, if there was ever a case against you, that she would also testify that what she had heard in the room was what Betsy reported was in the room. To this day, still, you say, actually, I can't remember what was said in the room. Is that still your situation with Betsy?
That is still my. I don't have a recollection of that conversation, and it's a little. I mean, this is where Betsy and I can never reconcile. She has a strong memory of it. I do not have a strong memory of it. I think it's highly improbable that at that moment in a patient's treatment process that a doctor would come in and have an open conversation about that in front of a bunch of strangers to him and or her. And so just because of medical privacy laws and HIPAA laws, and all of the things that are firmly in place, doctors just don't do that. But that's neither here nor there. What we all know what happened. If I don't have a recollection of it and she does, I'm sorry for the way that I treated the Andreas. I have said that. And, you know, to me, I mean, I would love for at some point for them to accept my apology. But you know what? Some people just aren't in that place and may never be.
When her name came up on your podcast recently with the interview that you were doing with is it Ben Foster, the actor who played you in the program, that movie, you said there was like a pause when he asked you the question. I don't know the specific wording of the question, but it was basically suggesting that maybe there was some underlying motive in how she was defending her family that went beyond defending her family, and you went, "Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned." Doesn't really sound like you're making amends to a woman when that's, you know, a pretty terrible thing to say about her.
No, I don't know if you just listened to 30 seconds of it. I said, listen, I want to be very respectful. I'm not trying to offend anybody. I don't want to create more of an issue with that family. And so I don't know if you missed that part.
I heard that. I heard the whole thing. Yeah, it was a really interesting interview.
Glad you liked it.
But it did seem kind of, you know, there was a gap there. I don't know. It just didn't seem like that was, it seemed like you still have something against Betsy, that you're still, you know, you weren't like, no, hang on a second, I'm going to stop that right there. It was more like, whoa, we're not going there. And then there's room for people to fill in that gap of about 30 seconds before you get to the, I want to be very respectful. But anyway, maybe we should move on from this, because like I did speak to Betsy in advance of this, and she said that I can say on the record, Lance has not made amends. I don't want anything from him other than for him to stop lying about me. When he was smearing me, very few in the media contacted me. So I just wanted to put that side of it out there. Michele Ferrari, let's talk a bit about that, because you put him in the Alec Gibney movie. And I was astonished by that, because at that stage, Michele Ferrari is one of the world's most recognized doping doctors. He's had a conviction, granted it's been overturned, but the world and his wife knows that Ferrari is dodgy. And you let Alex Gibney go and interview him and see all the stuff that's there and, you know, show some of the science that you guys are working on. What was your motivation in sharing Ferrari with Gibney?
I mean, Alex Gibney was in charge of that project. So that was not, if Alex wanted to talk to Ferrari, then that was done on his own. You'd have to ask Alex about that.
But you didn't nix it, though. You didn't say, no, hang on a second, you can't do that.
No, I mean, you'd have to ask. Alex is I think, more independent than that. And I don't think that he would have. I don't think that's the way he operates.
Ferrari, though, obviously, you know, you paid $1 million to Ferrari over the years. You could have said, listen, please don't talk to this guy.
I mean, yeah, I guess I could have.
So why didn't you?
Why didn't I say what?
Don't speak to Gibney. Don't do anything here, Michele. This is a house of cards. It's going to come tumbling down, and it's going to bring you and me and everybody we know down with it.
I don't know. I wasn't at that point. I wasn't that involved, and I wasn't that worried about. I knew that this was all going to be out, whether it was via documentaries or books or cases with testimony, depositions, etc.
Okay. Did Michele Ferrari ever offer to supply you with a motor for your bike?
Absolutely not.
And did you ever consider using a motor for your bike?
Of course not.
Well, this is interesting, right? Because it's degrees of, like, what's the difference between using the best EPO and using a motor? I'm kind of interested, because we're hearing that the motors and mechanical doping is something that there's a big story brewing, something's going to break. And, you know, it would be very interesting to hear, like, you guys were the best and you were determined to win from 99 onwards. And it's around this time, we think, that the Hungarian inventor starts to offer people stuff. And if I was in possession of a motor, the first person I would go to would be you and say, here, listen, what do you think?
Okay, and your point?
Did you ever use a motor?
Absolutely, I just told you, absolutely not.
And there's as a matter of interest, why? Like, what's the difference between doing that and taking EPO?
Garrett, what are you a complete rookie? What are you talking? I mean, in 1999, nobody even knew you could put motors were for motorcycles. What are you? I mean, are you out of your mind?
No, I. Well, look,
I mean, honestly, seriously. I mean, first of all, I know that that's topical. I know that there has been a rider caught with a motorcycle or with a motor in their bike. But what? I mean, are you crazy?
No, I'm just talking to people who are saying that there's a big story about motors coming, and I'm interested to get your perspective on it and see if anybody ever offered you one. But obviously,
right? And I answered that, and the answer is no.
You know, there is miracle is not existing in this sport.
Yeah.
There is no miracles. It's we are terrestrial people, not martial. So the gravity is everybody is
yeah.
acting on everybody. And okay, if you go a bit faster is okay. You can be strong, but not with 30% of difference respect the other races.
Do you
not possible.
Do you know Michele Ferrari?
Yes. Yes.
Have you ever?
He's a friend. Yes.
Have you ever sold a bike to him, or a system to him?
Yes, but he using because he came to me. He approached to me some years ago. just to understand this system, is if it exists, if it really exists. And he understand it, how to use it for training. And for training, he make there is a blog. You know, there is a he has a blog, 53x12.com. And you can read the efficacy of this system, and you can understand how much it's helped. So if you use this, it's better than using behind the scooter, you know, when you make a velocity acceleration your muscles. If you're using my bike, this bike is bringing you 2-3 weeks before in top form. You reach your top form some weeks before, because it's make the same effect. And you not smoke inhale the smoke of the scooter.
Okay.
More healthy.
Okay, so for training, Michele Ferrari...
For training is excellent. Yes, it's excellent.
Michele Ferrari has used your system for training for in advance of big races.
What?
Before, say, a Grand Tour, if he wanted to get a rider up to peak performance, he would use
this
your...
I don't know, but he made this blog and he tested and he can confirm this bike is really helpful.
Okay.
For me, to training,
and
also for training, it's good. And if you have an injury, for example, if you have an injury and you suffer because you wanted to stay with your group, your friends, or your son or your grandson, if you use this bike, you don't need to stay at home.
They're the uses that you would hope that it's always put to, and unfortunately, sometimes it may be true that riders will get their hands on this and use it in a race. You don't know. You don't know of any specific examples.
You know, for me, some racers use it. Because miracles. I told you, miracles doesn't exist.
If you'd had a conviction for assault earlier in your life, would that have been the wake up call?
I don't know. It's like that's who knows. You know, it could have been. It might not have been. That's the ifs, buts, and maybes. You know, I don't know. I don't. There's many things I ask myself. Jesus, I spent hours and days and couldn't morning in recovery asking myself if I had done this, if I had done that, if I hadn't done this, would I still be here today? But like, I can't look back at that now. And all I can try and do is look forward and try and be a better person.
Yeah. Okay. There's one last thing that I really want to talk to you about. This is a remarkable story up to that point, and I think a lot of people are right behind you in the recovery that you've made. I remember watching the Monaghan game in 2015 and seeing the mouthing that they were doing and thinking, this is an unbelievable display of fortitude by you, because I kind of had an idea what they were doing. I kind of knew what they were at, and it was so stupid of them to get dragged into that, and you guys win the game and crush their dreams, and actually that was their one chance of being really successful. And I remember thinking at that stage, this guy's really got his life back on track, and I really hope it works out for him. And it's exactly the same with the book, until you come to this incident with the 15-year-old, and I'm like, I can't get behind that. I can't get behind somebody who's involved in the incident and then who deals with it and the aftermath of the incident in the way that you've done. We obviously were contacted by the father and asked not to speak to you, and there's been a kind of a delay in getting you on the show, and people were wondering why have we not had you on, considering the high profile nature of the book. What's your take on that now?
Look, I have solicitors in place and different people, and as they've said to me, is they have advised me not to talk about the incident in relation to it's not fair for me to come on here and to talk about anything that's going on out of respect to both parties. So
we have a statement from the family.
Right.
As a family, we have been deeply impacted by Colin McCarron's actions. My daughter has been damaged and affected. We feel that he has never shown any remorse for his actions. In his autobiography and in subsequent newspaper interviews, he was afforded the opportunity to say how remorseful he was for his actions, but he failed to do so. We also want to point out that he used the Irish version of his name on Facebook in contacting our daughter, which must be assumed was to disguise his identity. Due to his well-publicised role in a pornography film, we had to have a test done for HIV and AIDS, and we had to wait a couple of weeks for results. They were the longest few weeks of our lives. In this life, we all have to be responsible and accountable for our actions, no matter what the outcome shall be. We, the family, hope that he will be held accountable for those actions. What's your response, Colin?
No response. That's all I'm going to say about that.
You've no response.
I don't know.
You said in an interview...
Look, all I'm going to say is I was fully investigated by the law of Ireland and they found me there was no prosecution. There's a reason why there was no prosecution.
Do you know why the reason there was no prosecution?
Why is that?
Because of the honest mistake defence. Right. Now, the DPP, it's our understanding that the DPP didn't bring charges as they accepted the defence of honest mistake, but they do also accept that you had sex with this girl.
Right, okay.
That's a fact, is it?
No, it's not a fact. And I'll not be commenting on it anymore.
So you didn't have sex with this girl?
There's no comment on it.
Okay,
you know?
So well, we're in a difficult situation here, right? Because everybody wants to support the story of the man who recovers his life, who becomes a taxpayer, who becomes a citizen again, who has this incredible story and a narrative. But then you called yourself a victim because you had a book launch cancelled.
Right, okay. Come here.
You don't see yourself as a victim, do you?
No. You see, that was a headline taken up. What I said is I had family friends that were coming from different parts of the world that I've been through a hell of a lot this last 3 years. A hell of a lot. And for you or anybody, you'll never understand what I've been through. To try and take your own life, to being on the edge of taking your own life and to not... Don't tell me you understand, because if you have never been to there, you'll never understand. And, you know...
What does that have to do with the 15-year-old?
This is what I'm saying. I'm saying to you, you're asking me what, you know, what... I'm a remorseful. Why, or am I a victim, sorry, of the... Like,
you said you were
a victim. I wanted to have all that time with my people that I loved. And, like, I to be honest... When I released the book, I didn't care about the whole publicity or going around and doing the PR. All I wanted was that night with my family and friends. And that was taken away from me.
But you can still have a night with your family and friends. You're not actually a victim, though.
That's okay.
But sorry, you feel you are still a victim?
No.
So
did I say that?
You did say it. You said that you were a victim in an interview on balls.ie. That you were a victim. So you don't think you were a victim? Having that night taken away, you're taking that statement back, are you?
Look, I'm not talking about this anymore, so we can want to move on.
Well, it's difficult not to talk about it, Carl, because it's the fundamental point of the book where it's a huge incident where it goes to show that, like, the faith that we've had in you, the belief that we put in you, it's hard to get that back when you're on a website meeting a girl who, it turns out, is 15, and there's no sense of remorse. So you haven't expressed remorse yet to the girl.
I says on an interview that I felt very sorry for the family and the father, and
but not the girl,
and not the girl.
But you feel sorry for the girl.
But look, I'm not talking about this anymore. I've told you. If you want to move on, you can move on. I'm not talking about this. I've been advised by my solicitor to not talk about it. If you want to keep on talking about it, I'm not going to speak. That's
okay. Well, I guess we should probably leave it then.
Yeah, that's 100%.
Like, because it's an absolutely huge part of the book. It's a full chapter of the book that you're now deciding that you won't speak about.
Well, look at it. If I've been legally advised not to speak about it, then, you know, I'm not going to speak about it. Like,
all right. Well, listen, Carl. The book is called Out of Control: How My Addiction Almost Killed Me on My Road to Redemption. Do you feel you're redeemed?
No, I'm not redeemed. The day I'm redeemed is the day I probably die, and as I say, my programme will be complete then. Till then, far from redeemed.
I'm just trying to understand exactly the sense of writing the book, including the details of this incident in the book, and then not speaking about it. I don't fully understand exactly what the benefit of that is.
It's just the way it is.
All right. Carl, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.